Hi, my name's Steve Usher, and welcome to the Experienced Designers Podcast. Why, hello, everybody. A warm welcome to a brand new episode of the Experienced Designers Podcast. One of the perks of kind of recording podcasts is obviously, yes, I get to meet really amazing people, but also I get to kind of meet these kind of organizations as well. And whenever I kind of particularly meet ones with a kind of rich heritage or legacy brand, I often think what it would be like if we were able to kind of travel back in time to meet the inventors and offer them a glimpse into what their creation will become. And I couldn't imagine for a moment that Ole Kirk Christiansen, a carpenter from Billund in Denmark, could even imagine the impact his creation would have on the world. Founded in 1932, it wasn't until 1934, with just 7 employees, that the company's name was formed under the Danish words for play well, which translates to lig godt. For many of you, now famously known as Lego. And it wasn't until 1958 that the current stud and tube system was patented, paving the way for the journey I'm sure no one expected. Sadly, this also coincided with Ole Christiansen passing. In the 1960s, Legoland first opened its gates in Denmark, attracting 625,000 visitors in its first season. In the 70s, the much-loved minifigures appeared, and today more than 4 billion plus minifigures have been produced, making it the world's biggest population group. And yes, in case you're wondering, they do all come alive at night while we're sleeping. By the 1980s, Lego was selling in 115 markets. The Legoland space monorail and pirate ships were released. The first Lego World Cup Building Championship was also launched. In the 90s, Lego continued expanding into new territories, opening Legoland Windsor in the UK, and the Lego brick were being named as one of the products of the century. And then into the 2000s, of course, the famous Millennium Falcon was released after a license agreement with Star Wars. Other partnerships followed, including Warner Brothers, creating opportunity for Harry Potter sets, Ferrari for race cars, Lucasfilm paving the way for Indiana Jones, one of my favourites. And I think this is the period when the business really accelerated, seeing growth from almost 5,000 employees in 2006 to a mammoth 18,000 by 2016. Today, Lego now has approximately 140 stores globally, 17,000 people in 15 countries, and once again topped the annual Super Brands Index in 2019. So as a genuine fan of Lego, I was curious to learn more about what it's like to actually work there. So I was thrilled when Eunice Clements Tweedy, Global Head of Talent Acquisition, accepted my invitation to join me on the show. And I had the absolute pleasure of meeting Eunice at London HQ to learn more about her own experience of joining and working at Lego. What makes the culture so unique? And how, as a global talent acquisition team, they deliver best-in-class experience whilst protecting one of, if not, the most loved brands in the world. And finally, before you ask, yes, the office is everything you'd expect and more. A campfire made out of Lego where you can sit for a mindfulness session or eat lunch was one of the many standout things I got to see. And yes, there was also a Millennium Falcon. I hope you enjoy the show. And as always, thank you so much for listening. So Eunice, welcome to the Experienced Designers.
Hello. Fantastic to be here. Thank you.
Well, look, thank you for having me at the wonderful, is it European HQ here or is it London HQ?
It's the London HQ
office. I just had to share this with you actually. As soon as, when I walked in, what was really fascinating here, and for those listeners, it's there's a lot of Lego everywhere. It's interesting. The inner child started coming out already when you're sitting in the, because I saw the Millennium Falcon. And I was just like, wow, okay. Really? My inner child just wanted to kind of pick it up and start playing with it.
Did you play with any Lego in reception?
I didn't actually, okay. No. I thought I'd just sit there and just, yeah, be polite.
Okay.
Yeah,
so on the way out, maybe.
Absolutely. Well, I was actually going to say, should we put some Lego here on the
there
table?
There is,
maybe,
yeah.
Start piecing stuff together while Brilliant. We're together. So anyway, I digress already. I'm having started. So just for the audience, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and your role here at Lego.
Yeah. So my name's Eunice. I look after talent acquisition globally, which means I'm the guardian of all things talent attraction, talent acquisition and brand management. And I think I've probably got one of the best jobs in HR at the Lego Group. So I've been at Lego about 9 months. And before that, I was a career nomad for about 16 years, working for some incredible brands like BP and Virgin and Vodafone. But I've always wanted to work for Lego. So I hung up my boots and I found a really amazing home with the Lego family.
Fantastic. So what was your, just out of interest, what was it that from an external point of view, think back 11 months or 15 months when that decision was being made, what were some of the things that attracted you? What kind of spiked the interest?
I've worked for so many different industries, so many different amazing brands doing very, very different things in the talent ecosystem, that I knew I wanted to work for a very purposeful company. I'm a very creative, fun-driven individual, and I have some really strong values, of which were very similar to Lego from the outside in. And I've always been a huge fan of Lego. From a child through to now, I build the technical sets with my children. And who doesn't love an amazing Lego product to build? So it's one of those aspiring brands. I think everyone has one in their life they want to work for, and Lego was it. And I was stalking them for years to see if an amazing opportunity came up, and it didn't. And I was almost running out of hope. And then Christmas Eve, a year ago, I stopped wrapping presents. It was almost Christmas Eve. And I saw this amazing job advert and I applied for it. And just after Christmas, I started discussing the opportunity with Lego, and I joined a couple of months later, and I had the most incredible experience joining, which reinforced the purposeful reason why I wanted to join them.
So share us a little bit more insight into that. How was your journey into the business? What did they do that really kind of stood out or was kind of different?
That's a great question. So I wrote quite an unusual cover letter, hygiene. It's very hygienic applying to any organization. So it's always through, technology. But I wrote this really unusual cover letter, and it talked a little bit about what I think I could add to the Lego journey and what they were doing brilliantly and what they could really focus on. And I remember my husband saying very clearly, don't do it. They'll never phone you back. It's really off-putting. And I thought, no, because if they do phone me back, I know they're a very different kind of organization who is open to new ideas. And they did phone me back. And then my whole candidate experience was very high touch. I remember my now leader texting me, good luck for this. I had a very long panel interview. And hiring managers don't typically reach out to you as candidates before to say kind of good luck. And he'd connected in with me on LinkedIn, as his leader had, which I thought was really unusual. And I had this very warm, personalized experience into Lego. And even when I had been offered the role, my Michael, who I work for now, sent me this handwritten note, 3 pages, just outlining how grateful he was that I had chosen to join Lego, his hopes and dreams of our time together. And he sent me a Lego bus set to represent the start of our journey together. And this was all before day one. So my heart was captured. So when I hit my, hit the ground running, when I joined the business, I mean, Lego had me from before day one, which is actually very, very difficult to do.
It is. There's a real lesson in experience design right there, I think, because I think just listening to that, I think they touched a number of things. I think the experience was, it unraveled over time. They obviously made it very personal, certainly with a hand. I mean, who gets a handwritten letter these days?
I know.
So it's an interesting one. Why don't we start using faxes again? Because you would stand there on naturally.
Yeah, of course.
And then there's the memorabilia. So that's kind of something that's tangible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where's that sitting right now?
I built it with my children before I joined, and it sits in our hallway. And interestingly enough, I've been hiring some of my new team. And I did the same. You know, I reached out to them. I actually FaceTimed them their offer, which they were a little bit unsure of, but we talk about it now. And I sent them each a bus set and just saying, look, we've got this incredible journey. I started it, but I need someone with me. And the bus represents all of us together going on the road, but that we've yet to build. So I wanted them to have that amazing warm experience that I had. And I think it worked because they've seemed pretty grateful for that. Yeah.
Wonderful lesson there. Wonderful yes. lesson for listeners for sure. So before we delve into talent acquisition and your world and obviously the topic which we're going to cover today, I would just love to delve into the Lego business because I think it's such a, if you look at the history of the business, founded in the 50s, obviously the first Lego brick as we know now probably was, I think, 60s, if memory serves me right. And then from there, it's just this legacy brand, which probably since the turn of 2000 onwards has just turned into a commercial giant. And so, but a kind of this sense of this foundation is maintained through that period, through that growth. So I just wanted to get that's my perception of it and how I've looked at the history of the business. But I'd just love to delve in a little bit about what your impressions have been or what you can share.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously stuff that's not too sensitive.
Yeah.
Just to give us a bit of what's the cultural part and the values and just to give us a real kind of sense of that.
Yeah, of course. So Lego's 88 years young. It's still incredibly owned by the Lego family through generation and generation. And you really feel the Lego family's presence in everything that we do. There's papers that the Lego family have written, and it sets almost the blueprint of our journey and our journey yet to come in terms of our direction to 2032, which will be our 100 year anniversary. So we know our strategy years ahead and the direction we want to play. And they're very clear around the purpose us as a business is all about using children as our role models and ensuring they have the best possible play experience through the products that we make for them. Yes. So children really are our everything, and that whole kind of purpose weaves into our operating model, our processes, how we think. And it infuses our culture to be very community-led, and it feels like a very small family, although I'm one of 17,000 people across the world, which is even more remarkable, the fact that we're not listed and we are still run by the Lego family. And you really feel it. And I really underestimated the culture when joining. Having worked for so many businesses, I just thought, I've got this, and I hadn't at all. And I think what is really unusual is Lego, to be really successful at Lego, you have to do things in partnership with your colleagues. So it's not out front, it is shoulder to shoulder, it's hand in hand, and that's where you get the best kind of return in the role that you do and the value that you do. So our culture from the outside in looks really warm and colorful and fuzzy, and it is all of those things, but there is a very subtlety to the culture in getting it right. And I think if you can get it right, you can do incredible things here because you are hired with permission. And if you fight against it and try and make it your own culture, then you kind of bounce off against the cultural walls, and it sometimes doesn't play out.
So have you got an example of your first experience of that kind of shoulder to shoulder project or something that you, when you first came in the early few months of you being in the business?
Of course. So I joined a global leadership team and who'd been established already a year, which is tricky in itself. And I work with a lot of the global heads in the region around their talent acquisition strategy and delivering what we need for the business. So it was very clear from the onset, it didn't matter what ideas that I had and what experience I had, unless I could really understand how to do things in the Lego kind of way and really understand with how my colleagues operated, I wouldn't really have success in moving forward. So I worked really hard to delve into those relationships and form some really stable anchors out in the regions globally. And then I overlaid it with my experience in terms of, I think this is what we need to do. I couldn't have done it without spending some time forming those relationships and really understanding how things work here at Lego. And there is a certain Lego style to do that.
Yeah.
And it probably took me a little bit longer than I thought. But I think, you know, pace isn't everything sometimes when you're trying to get things right.
No, that's right. I noted some of the values here, just so correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So imagination, creativity,
yep.
fun,
yes.
learning,
yes.
and caring.
Brilliant.
Tell me a little bit about how those kind of play out, because I think lots of organisations talk about values, but actually embedding them and breathing them and living them. What's how are they connected? What's have you got any examples you could share
about
that?
And your observation is spot on. I've worked for many businesses where you have values on the wall, it's on people's laptops, and people talk about the values. And interestingly enough, at Lego, we don't talk about our values because we ensure that our behaviors and how we conduct ourselves and how we bring our best version to work infuses our values. So caring is probably actually one of my favorite ones. Here at Lego, there's loads of things that we do to care for the well-being of our employees. There's loads of like wellness programs. We do mindfulness courses, etc. We ensure that if you work in an office, you can have access to kind of fresh fruit or kind of snacks. You can do yoga at lunchtime or in the mornings. There's lots of activities that you can do to kind of keep your mind, body, and soul cared for. And your leaders and those around you, they have very demonstrable caring traits that, as you know, somebody working for someone else, you can feel straight away. So, for example, if you're having a one-to-one and you've got lots of stuff that you want to get through, it's not just about work. We typically start with how are you doing? You know, that caring side. And you can just see it in people's behaviors. And a lot of the other values kind of bubble up and they permeate in, you know, a lot of our processes and you can feel it. So it's interesting. We rarely talk about our values, but they are there in everything that we do.
How does the business support? Look, I'm just thinking if I came into Lego, there's going to be, because I'm me, I'm Steve, and I would perhaps look at those values or see how they're playing out. There'll be some that perhaps are very much more connected to me.
Yes.
But others perhaps that you have to adapt sometimes yourself. Yes. I mean, change starts within ourselves.
Of course.
How does the business support that? Because, you know, it's not everybody just slots in like a Lego brick perfectly on
course.
Top.
Yeah.
So how does that evolve? And when you've got 17,000 people, how do they ensure that that's kind of maintained and doesn't off-piece too much?
Yeah,
of
course.
In terms of the values.
We actually have a new program called the Leadership Playground. And it's something that we launched early spring last year. So it's fairly new still. And it's a program about everyone can be leaders, not just if you have a team and you've got management responsibility.
Yeah.
And through the program, our values are hardwired into it in terms of kind of behaviors. And it's all about creativity. It's about fun. It's about imagination. It's about doing things differently to support the culture that we're in.
Yes.
And we hire people who culturally augment who we have, not culturally fit, because I think once you start down the fit route, you start hiring clones, and we want to add to what we have and the color, etc. So we have these big global programs where you can be who you want to be in a frame, and you adapt your learning through that. And we have, whether it's LinkedIn Learning, for example, or more immersive programs to do that. So whatever's right for you, wherever you are, we probably have something that's going to fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's delve a little bit into the talent acquisition function, your world.
Oh, love it. My favorite topic.
So I thought what was interesting on reflection before meeting today, I was kind of, in fact, you mentioned, I think, the word guardian, I think, or custodian.
Yeah.
And for me, I was kind of like, wow, okay. So if I was Eunice and talent acquisition team, you are representing, you're a guardian, you're a custodian of the second most loved brand globally.
I know.
And it's, it presents a whole different level of challenges to so many organizations who are still trying to establish their brand or differentiate.
Yeah.
You know, the Lego brand is there, it's out there, it's every, you know, it's everywhere, it's so recognized. And I just think that that presents a whole different set of problems and challenges.
It does.
So what would you say are some of those kind of areas that, from a consideration, from a talent acquisition point of view, that you're faced with and you have to solve?
That's a great question. First off, I've never felt as much responsibility in my career as I have working in this role for the Lego Group. But because of that love and trusted brand, and I think when you have a brand who you work for that is so recognized, the decisions you make have to be very thoughtful and deeply anchored in the right thing. And it's incredible. So before I joined here, the global talent acquisition team was really in its infancy, and they've done incredible things with very little. And I think we attract a huge amount of volume, but we only hire 0.5% of those who apply to the Lego Group. Yet we focus on 99.5% of our applications to ensure that they have a great experience, because at the end of the day, you know, they could be our potential consumers. And as you know, the world of consumer and, you know, being a candidate is a very fine line where they're very closely interlinked. So we ensure that our candidate experience, whether you are successful or not at the Lego Group, is positive and is standout. But it does mean, because of our brand, we attract so many. So we are very mindful of that, and we work very, very hard on that candidate experience. And we measure that, and I call it our happiness scores. And they are very, very high. But to try and maintain that year on year is really tough, because you are having to evolve what you do. And it's a hyper-competitive marketplace, so it's continually having to stand out. And being very cognizant that you are working for, what, you know, the second most loved brand in the world, feels like a big responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, let's delve in. Oh, I've got loads of, okay, let's delve into this. So, okay. So how do you then tackle the candidate experience? How have Lego gone about that in terms of setting a standard and looking at people, process, technology and experience, if we look at it on those kind of those four levels? How have they approached that? What's some of the kind of the delivery and how they've achieved, you know, these kind of results?
Yeah, of course. So we look at the teams who support the various parts of our process, and obviously technology underpins that. And we haven't yet gone down the AI route, but, you know, we are potentially looking at that without sacrificing the experience. So there are certain teams which have a lot of interaction with candidates. So, for example, our shared service team, where they're doing all the interview coordination, the logistics, etc., they are very high touch in their communication with candidates. They are very accessible to candidates, and they respond pretty quickly, and they are there to support the candidate through that that logistical journey of going through the various job stages. And I think the way we differentiate ourselves is by all of that experience, accessibility, and someone who you can actually pick up a phone to and talk to, which is actually quite rare these days.
Yeah.
And then if you look at our recruiters, they are our kind of marketeers of our recruitment world, and they're pretty good. I mean, they are standout in terms of what they do, how they do it, and they really epitomize our values and our brand from a candidate perspective. So if you add the two together, as a candidate, you have somebody to talk to, somebody who's accessible, and someone supporting you through that journey makes the whole experience feels actually probably a lot less stressful than in reality it actually is.
Yeah. Tell me, but just to give me some context on the TA team, how is that structured? How many people do you have in the team?
So our global team is reasonably big, and we are structured in five hubs. So we have a team out in America, and they cover the Americas region and Mexico, etc. And then we have a team in EMEA. There's a ton of countries in there. And then we're headquartered out in Denmark. So we have a big team in Northern Europe. Mm-hmm. And then we have a team in China and a team in Singapore, and they cover the APAC markets. So it's really tricky sometimes juggling those time zones. And we ask a lot for the team when we are on global calls. But we set up these standards and these frameworks where we give enough to the team so they know they have governance and guidance around how we do things and how they should behave, but enough regional bandwidth that they can adapt to the market they're in, because something that's going to work for Mexico certainly wouldn't work for China, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you approach a strategy for a global talent acquisition team with obviously multiple demographics, a huge variety of skills? It's super complex. How do you approach that as kind of global head of TA? How do you think about it? How do you construct that?
With a great deal of care. So it's almost like being the architect of something very, very complex, a bit like one of our architect sets. So kind of our 16 plus sets, for example, would be one of those. So the Millennial Falcon is, you know, what we're talking about in terms of scale. So you do it with care. You roll up global themes, but you make them work on a regional basis. And we are nothing but autonomous at the LEGO Group. So, you know, we have a lot of trust in what we do. So you create frames, but bandwidth to localize and to regionalize. And then you evolve it and you test it. And if it doesn't work, you tweak it and you change it. And you have to be very humble to know when things don't work.
Yes.
And then you have to be a real champion of when things do work. So there's a real subtle thread about having experience and providing that lens, but then adapting to the business that you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you've hit on something there as well, is around kind of that failing forward as well. That
totally.
Actually it's, it's good to, well, I would expect it certainly in LEGO, because obviously by the sheer nature of LEGO, it's about testing and reiterating, et cetera.
It is,
so it's
yeah.
all of that. So
failing fast, failing fast, forward.
Yeah. As fast as you can.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little, I just want to scoot back to the candidate experience, because it's something actually genuinely close to my heart.
Brilliant.
So, there's been over the years, it's great. A number of years ago, maybe 5 years ago, kind of Candex or candidate experience became really hot. It was really kind of one of those hot topics and themes, I guess. So, and absolutely there are certain brands, who need protecting from a consumer, perspective. How, on a practical level, how do LEGO kind of measure the candidate experience, and how are they using that kind of insight to set benchmarks, but equally as well to learn and then look at that from a kind of next development program or implementing new programs to improve?
Yeah, that's a brilliant question.
Yeah, how do you do that?
So because we are a consumer business, we're very lucky that we have experts that we can pull on. So we would work with our MPS team,
great.
Who are our SMEs around this, to say, so we've had MPS scores for our candidates and our hiring managers and onboarding. So those are our three happiness scores that we track and measure. So we would work with them to say, what would be below target, for example? What should we be hitting? And if we were really to stretch ourselves, what would be outstanding? So they help us work the hygiene factors through in terms of numbers.
Okay.
And then we track it quarter on quarter by region.
Yeah.
And then we roll it up to global insights. And then we look at how we can adapt where we aren't perhaps, you know, as high in one region than the other. So this goes back to providing a framework that we all work towards, but sometimes we have to tweak when some of the markets perhaps are struggling around hiring leader happiness, etc. And interestingly, this is the time of year where everyone looks at their KPIs from last year to set for next year. And, you know, we are very fortunate that we are outstanding for our candidate experience year on year. And it's nothing to do with me. It's a complete testament of the team who work every day with those candidates.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is I think there's been a bit of an obsession with candidate experience in those two words. And I think sometimes the narrative is a little bit too focused. Is it's candidate, 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 candidate. We must please the candidate. But we all know that actually, if you look at what a candidate journey or a hiring journey looks like, is that the candidate isn't the only person involved here. It is the hiring manager. So I'm really pleased and super impressed that actually you do take the time to ensure that there's a happiness index for your hiring managers.
Yes. And onboarding. Yeah.
So it's and then obviously you see perception versus reality to see the impacts, to see how people are the experience of onboarding is super important. I'll come to onboarding.
Oh, brilliant.
Hiring managers, have you done, what kind of work do you do with hiring managers? Because I genuinely had a conversation at lunch 2 days ago about hiring managers. And so I think what's interesting is that, you know, there's this kind of we all assume hiring managers can interview effectively. Majority can't. It's not a natural thing, you know, as a, as a recruiter. Of course, it's a natural, you do it, it's a repetitive task and you learn over time. How do you help your hiring managers with tools and education? Because also hiring managers come and go.
Of course.
And so sometimes initiatives that are implemented tend to be an initial push, but then the first, a year down the line, maybe, I don't know, 20% of managers may have moved around. You brought some new people in.
Yeah.
So how do you maintain that as well in terms of ensuring that that standard is maintained and supported?
It's tricky to get right. Yeah, of course. So we have enough tools, but not too many where, and enough processes and not too many where we give them just enough, but the recruiters really are at their best in the space. So they have a pretty high touch service, the hiring leaders. And we ensure that recruiters haven't got overwhelmed with requisition or roles, that they can't give them that high touch experience. So they have a bespoke recruiter. They are able to work with them super closely throughout the process. The recruiter will do the interviews with them. So they have either that safety net if they're less experienced, or they can lead out but know that the recruiter has this in terms of the assessment. And it goes back to the Lego way around. We operate shoulder to shoulder with those hiring managers. So they are supported end to end, and we can dial up things for them or we can pull back, depends on how good or confident or underdeveloped they are in the hiring process, because that whole experience piece will ultimately get translated to that candidate.
Yeah.
And that pull through piece is super important. So we don't over index on tools actually, but they are very accessible to that recruiter, and we find that's what's key for us anyway here at Lego.
It's really interesting. I think the learning here is high touch.
And not too much of anything else.
Absolutely, and committing to the resource to deliver that. I call it the Zen triangle.
Oh, so when you've what's got, that?
Well, when you have kind of this perfect harmony between the hiring manager and recruiter, then it delivers a great experience to the candidate. So I just call it like a Zen triangle.
Brilliant.
Where if that's all working in sync, then yeah, the experience typically is of a very good standard.
Brilliant. I might have to steal that.
You can absolutely steal it.
Brilliant.
You can absolutely, it's yours.
There okay, you go. Stolen.
It's even great. On record as well.
Perfect.
So let's talk about onboarding. So how does Lego work around the connectivity between the hiring into onboarding?
Yes.
I'll be interested in how you knit that together, because I've worked and seen organizations where it tends to be viewed at quite well, very, very separately. But I'm certainly the last couple of years, onboarding seems to be as a theme in the industry, becoming hotter. There's more technology enabling the interactions. How have Lego approached onboarding? How do they do that?
So they do it pretty well, and I haven't focused on this area in my time at Lego because I really haven't had to.
Yeah.
And we can tell through the surveys, the scores. I've been onboarded, my new team have, and they do it well, so it feels seamless from that amazing moment where you are offered to 4, 6, 12 weeks later, you know, hitting the ground running. But we do a couple of things really well. On your day one, your kit is here and it works. So you can be very practically up and running very, very quickly, which is not so much important for us as a business because we want you to do things, but candidates like to feel safe and they have a place and they have everything technology-wise connected. And we make sure that happens. And something we really do well at Lego is everyone has a brick buddy. So on day one, your brick buddy will reach out to you. And if you're virtual, have a virtual lunch. If they're in the office, have a face-to-face lunch. And they are the person you can ask all those random, crazy questions that you are afraid to either ask your team buddy or your leader. And they will take you through probably your first couple of months at Lego. So you feel that you have someone. And then we do incredible onboarding plans, which typically take you to 90 days.
Yeah.
So you arrive, all your kit is here and it works. You have somebody with a smiling face going, let's go for a coffee, let's go for a lunch. Do you know how your printer works? And then your leader will lay out your expectations of the role. Here are some diary invites. Here are the team you meet for the next 90 days. And suddenly the fear of joining actually is translated to hitting the ground very, very quick or very, very quickly. And you get up and running so much faster. And we almost have you there and you're focused and you're ready to go without the distractions of a new role and everything that comes with it.
Yeah, fantastic. So what does 2020 and the future look like for Lego? What's some of the initiatives or focus that that you're working on?
As a business?
Yeah.
There's so many things. We are looking at how we delight our consumers even more. And that's whether we, you know, keep investing in our hero sets, the ones that everyone wants, or some of the new sets that we're very good at understanding trends in the marketplace and translating that very quickly into sets. So, for example, Stranger Things was pretty big last year. Central Perk was a set we brought out when Friends was kind of relaunched, and it kind of sold out very, very quickly. And we always invest in that side of the business. And there's very clear planning by that team to do that. And then if I bring things closer to home within my world or the broader talent piece, we're investing in technology. We're going through a massive technology upgrade. Which will be transformational for the business, I think. But how do we use technology without sacrificing the experience would be the lens that I add. And we have a ton of other kind of exciting plans, sustainability being a big one for us as a business.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Were you? I thought I'd get it in there. Being obviously plastic is our product. Yeah. And I mean, last year, some of these sets, which were plant sets, were actually sustainable anyway. So how do we accelerate our plans around that? Because we have a duty of care to the planet we're on, and we have a duty of care to the consumers that we delight.
Absolutely.
So it's a big agenda for us. It's a big responsibility strategy that we're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So as part of technology upgrade, how has that impacting talent acquisition? What kind of, it sounds to me like you have a really solid core high touch process or approach with candidates. So I think that's a good start, because that means you're not kind of being led purely by technology to deliver a great experience. So what kind of things are you looking at to kind of develop that using, because technology is coming our way,
of course,
and more certainly in the HR tech space. So are there any things that you're entertaining or considering just to kind of add, you know, add on to your currently high level team?
Yes. So across the HR ecosystem, we're doing a huge technology upgrade, and it will take us quite a few years to get the whole technology piece in. But recruitment and onboarding are going first, which is mega exciting, although slightly terrifying. And it's really upgrading what we have in terms of the technologies that supports our process, but also with a very specific lens around looking at AI and how we really pipeline for talent for the future through a CRM system, for example. Now, whenever I say AI at Lego, people start, you know, getting a little bit nervous, because there is ultimate fear that either going to replace some of our activities or it will impact on our experience. And I'm not looking at AI to replace that. I'm looking at AI to augment what our recruiters do to help them do their jobs better. So actually it gives them time back to overinvest in our hiring leaders or our candidate community. That's where I'm looking at AI.
Yeah.
Not replacing our recruiters with chat box or anything like that, or robots. That is not the lens of AI that I think we need. And then the other side is we're actually very good at Lego at being very planful in terms of the number of people we need to hire and really planning that far forward. Our workforce planning is pretty robust, which is astonishing, because it's difficult to get right. And I really want to push the boundaries further around being talent ready for people we don't even need or need to hire just yet. And that is creating those talent communities, those warm conversations in readiness for when we need to hire. And that is really difficult to get right. And we need some form of technology to support those talent pooling and those conversations, and an opportunity to engage in talent well ahead before we need
Absolutely. Just looking at perhaps some of the recruiters' role now, what aspects do you think AI could bring, or data, or automation could bring to some of that of their role that would free them up to do some of the more kind of the more high touch or more kind of people focused aspect?
Yeah.
Have you kind of identified any areas, or have some thought around what areas exist or could exist?
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff in this space. And I probably think a couple of areas. I think how we source candidates is getting harder and harder. You know, there's low employment rates in many of the countries we operate in. So we have to work a lot harder around that passive engagement and those passive audiences. So I think there are AI tools out there which do actually a lot of sourcing for you. There's those spiders which crawl out and actually find talent and bring it back to you. So a lot of that hard work up front perhaps is slightly lessened. And the other area is we have so many incredible people applying to the Ledo Group, that tens of thousands of application, and don't forget we hire a tiny percentage. So how can we manage that population so the recruiters are actually seeing a reduced number of quality driven applications without having to deal with the whole top funnel, but still giving the whole top funnel a good experience by return? And that's going to be a real
that's
trick.
That's a challenge.
We need to get right this year.
Yes.
An exciting one.
It is. How does it work with, say, GDPR or kind of putting them in some kind of funnel for future contact? Is that pretty fairly basic question? I just want to get my head around.
Of course.
Because obviously you've got different territories with different legalities.
Yes.
Adding to the complexity. Because obviously, in my mind, I was like, wow, so that's like 99.5% are basically, you know, they potentially are future talent pools.
Yeah, of course.
So do you have any initiatives with them now that you're looking to kind of develop further? What kind of stuff or initiatives? Yeah.
It's interesting, Lego Group, we've adopted GDPR globally.
Yeah.
Not just obviously the territories where it matters. And I think as long as you're really clear with your candidates up front that we're going to hold your data for 6, 12, 18 months, whatever it is, candidates are usually pretty happy for you to do that, even if they're not successful, because they're quite open-minded by applying for another role or being contacted again. So I think it's about just being super clear with your candidates around managing their data and, you know, keeping it absolutely watertight with no risks or breaches to anything.
And how are you managing, or what kind of stuff are you doing to maintain the relationship at the moment? What kind of approaches are you taking?
We're not doing a huge amount, if I'm honest, because our current system is a little bit aged and it doesn't have the functionality we perhaps want. And I guess that's why we are looking at technology to enable us to do that a little bit better for the future.
My word, you're going to have a few candidates.
I know.
I absolutely guarantee that.
Brilliant.
Absolutely. Okay, so just to move into our final area.
Okay.
So I have a surprise, a quick fire round for you.
Okay. I'll do my best.
So it's all Lego related.
Okay.
Okay. So here we go. I think there's nine questions. Here we go.
Okay.
So do you have a favorite Lego brick?
Favorite Lego brick? Yes. The Ninjago Little Warriors.
Okay.
I had two in my bag when I came for my interview at Lego, and I carry them everywhere. And I think for me, they represent strength, courage, and the ability to fight adversity. And I used to play with Ninjago with my little boy, who's not little, he's 13 now. And it's just, we've got them everywhere in the house, and I love them. I think they're brilliant.
Favorite Lego set?
Oh, Lego City.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Lego City. I think it's one of our hero sets. It's been around for ages. I used to play as a child. And I love the fact that here at Lego, we're very gender neutral with our sets. And I loved it. I thought I was going to be a policewoman at one point in my life, but that didn't turn out to be so.
Favorite Lego theme?
Favorite Lego theme? Oh, it's got to be Star Wars.
Yes.
Our Star Wars designers have been here a long time, and they are truly extraordinary talent. And who doesn't love being the Star Wars? So
absolutely.
You can be anything you want to be in Star Wars.
Well, there's no shortage of Star Wars movies
at the moment, so there's
plenty more to go. Your first memory of Lego?
Duplo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Duplo, throwing my bricks at my sister, who I built a tower and she'd come across and knocked it over, and I threw a few bricks at her, I think.
Love it. What is your favourite thing to build? So if we just had a bunch of Lego,
what would I build?
What would we build? What would you build?
I would build something really colourful.
Yeah.
I would build something really simple, and I would have to have minifigures in there, and I'd want to build it with someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Favourite Lego movie?
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love Benny. I think number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, number one. Because I think the first time for everything is usually the most special.
Yes, agree. Yes. Agree. The second one was still good.
Still very, very good. Yeah.
You mentioned Ninja, but I'll throw another up. Your favorite figure.
Actual favorite figure.
Yeah. Anyone that stand out?
There's too many. There's a unicorn figure. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh my god, so cute. With like a rainbow kind of horn. That's pretty cute. It's white. You must look it up. That's okay. One of my favorite figures.
I will. Okay. Favorite Lego hairstyle. The.
Because
there's lots of them.
There is lots. Mm. I would go for something colorful, ideally striped.
Okay.
Okay.
Mine's the side sweep.
Oh, is it? It's interesting because you have got a bit of a side sweep going on. Brilliant.
And if you were to build a famous person out of Lego, who would it be?
I would build, this may be controversial, Donald Trump, because there's only a couple of colours going on there and it's orange and yellow.
Super easy.
Super easy. Not complex. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Well
done. So on that note, Eunice, thank you so much for allowing me time at Lego today. And it's been so lovely to meet you. And thanks for giving us a glimpse into your world as a global head of talent here at Lego.
Thank you. It's been amazing fun. It's been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. Another episode of the Experience Designers podcast. Thank you so much to my guest, Eunice. It was absolutely lovely to meet you. And as always, if you wish to connect with Eunice, I'll leave all of the normal links in the bio and notes on the website. If you like this episode, please like, share, rate, do whatever's possible. It really does go a long way to helping me really kind of accelerate the podcast and share it even further across the world. So thank you again to my guest. And until the next time, thank you for listening and see you soon.